Brand new luxury apartments. If you're in the market, listen. Brand new luxury apartments. Champion has a new property, River Park of Dublin, which is a mile south of Dublin. Location is everything. Spacious 1, 2, and 3 bedroom homes, designer finishes, resort style amenities, exceptional customer service. That's Champion. Champion's brand new luxury apartments, River Park of Dublin. Now do something about it. Visit livewithchampion.com. Livewithchampion.com.
I'm John Batchelor. I welcome Felix Leit of CBS News and the Moscow Times reporting from Russia about the virus, which right now is looking to make another difficult winter for the mainland of Europe. There are reports in Germany of a rise of cases. There are reports in Britain of the prime minister concerned enough to use the word lockdown. And these are countries that are doubly, in some instances, triply vaccinated, with the vaccine developed in the summer of 20 and released in the winter of 21. But, Felix, a very good day to you. In Moscow, you have Sputnik V, which is said to be efficacious, and yet the low number of vaccinated people in Russia has remained a puzzle. Has there been an official response to the rise in positive cases or hospitalizations these last weeks, given that it's also happening in Europe?
Good evening, John. It's great to be here, as always. Well, so, you know, it's a difficult question. I think that Russia, it's almost sort of a country sort of apart in the terms of the pandemic, right? You know, we've almost cast our own sort of path here. You know, from the first, it was sort of much lighter lockdowns than the rest of the continent. And now, you know, the Sputnik V, it's sort of its own vaccine. It's not one that's widely used anywhere else, I think. But the real issue here, right, is that there's just an extraordinary level of vaccine hesitancy in Moscow. You know, every piece of information that we have, right, suggests that a majority of Russians, not just a large number, but actually a majority of Russians, about 55% of people, just do not want to take a vaccine, right, just distrust the vaccine. And so what we have now, which is sort of, you know, rising case numbers, we have Moscow spent a week in lockdown, which I think you and I discussed that a few weeks ago, and we have sort of, you know, the outlying regions bringing in their own restrictions. What that sort of all shows is that really, you know, the Russian government has just really kind of failed to break down the sort of this reservoir of anti-vax sentiment. You know, there's very sort of widespread conspiracy theories, very widespread sort of distrust in the vaccine. And whatever the Russian government has been doing in the last sort of weeks and months, it really hasn't succeeded in doing that. So what we see now is sort of Russia perhaps not posting record numbers like it was a week ago, but still really high. So it's you know, to be quite frank, it's a pretty extraordinary failure from the sort of the point of view of the Russian authorities, I think.
We have a report in the Moscow Times that one region of Russia, Khabarovsk, which is 8,000 kilometers east of Moscow, this is a vast country, has started internal passports. Is there talk of such a thing in Moscow, Felix?
It's an interesting question. I mean, so the honest answer is yes, but I think it's very important how they decide to go about it. You know, there's a worry, I think, that's been reported in the Russian press, actually. There's a worry within the sort of the Kremlin that Putin personally should not be associated with these kind of unpopular measures because it might backfire and sort of have negative effects on his personal popularity. And I think the whole system, not just sort of Putin directly, basically do not want that to happen because he's very much, you know, the main man, you know, the number one. And so what is likely to happen is that sort of regional officials will announce these kind of unpopular measures. So in Khabarovsk, it's the local governor who said, you know, we're going to do this, because they really don't want to sort of tar Putin with this very unpopular brush of sort of vaccine passports, of sort of lockdowns, of things like that. So I think, you know, we're very likely to see the regions and, like, even cities sort of outbidding each other in how tough they can be.
An anti-satellite test, much in the news of the around the edges here in the United States because of what is understood to be a threat to the ISS. Is this getting play in Moscow? Because I see in the Moscow Times there's pushback.
there was a sort of a defunct space satellite that the Russians had launched in, I think, about 1987, that was still up there. And the Russians basically used a missile to destroy it. So, you know, it's their own property. They obviously have a right to do it. But I think the American reaction was negative because there's always been sort of a very strong, almost a taboo against sort of the weaponization of space. You know, and this is something that goes back to the Cold War, to sort of Gorbachev and the Star Wars program, you know, of the Yeltsin administration. Sorry, the Reagan administration, I should say. You know, and sort of this was seen as a bit of a taboo that had been broken. But I think, you know, now it seems that the Russian side has acknowledged that they did destroy their own stuff with sort of, you know, a missile. And it's a strange story because the issue itself is not that they did it, but that now that the space around it is full of this debris, which is sort of allegedly impeding non-Russian satellites. So it's a strange story that didn't get that much attention in the Russian press, I must say, because it's quite strange and technical. I think, as you said, it's a little bit nerdy, you know?
Very, very much so. And we will see if it comes to anything. Now, it's a dispute of frowns. A big story that I know is getting attention, it certainly is in Europe, is the German regulator, and perhaps the Brussels regulator as well, suspending for the moment, temporary suspension of the approval of Nord Stream 2, the pipeline that bypasses Ukraine, that bypasses Belarus, that flows right into Germany, and that has been part of the conversation about Russia supplying enough natural gas for Europe to get through the winter. How does Moscow react to the report that this is German regulation and not geopolitics?
Yeah, so I mean, this is a very interesting story because I think the Russian reaction has been unusually quite muted. You know, there hasn't really been any sort of allegations of a sort of a political fix being in here. What I think we have seen, though, is that the Russian side is basically is banking on the fact that it sees the Germans as basically equally as committed to Nord Stream 2 as they were. You know, Nord Stream 2 was a multi-year project that was ultimately brought to completion. It is now sort of, you know, it could now work. And all that sort of, I think, from the Russian side remains is to sort of dot the legal I's and dot and cross the legal T's, as it were. You know, the fundamental issue here is actually very easily resolved, right? The problem from the German regulator's point of view is that allegedly one needs to have a sort of a German registered company to begin the pipeline operation. That's easy to solve because Gazprom or, you know, whoever operates the Nord Stream pipeline can just incorporate a German company. That's very easy to solve, and it could prove to be like a month-long delay, but, you know, I don't think anyone thinks either in Berlin or in Moscow that will fundamentally kind of throw the Nord Stream 2 project off course.
Belarus. Yep. I mention this because there's a pipeline through Belarus, but a much bigger story has to do with migrants in Belarus. I have reported for some weeks about the allegation that Lukashenko's government in Minsk is deliberately bringing in migrants, desperate people who pay thousands of dollars from Iraq, and then guiding them to the Lithuanian and Polish frontier and saying, that way to the EU, keep going. And yet now, the Polish authorities and the Lithuanian authorities have raised barriers, barbed wire. Now, what is fresh to me is what is happening in Minsk, because I see the photographs from the border taken from the Lithuanian and Polish side. But you're reporting that the migrants are in Minsk, everywhere in Minsk. What does the capital look like? Is there a concern in Minsk that they're being overrun?
Yeah, so my colleague, in the last week was actually in Minsk. He took a flight in on a sort of one of these purpose-built kind of refugee camps, refugee flights, from Turkey into Minsk. And his view was that, you know, the presence of migrants throughout Minsk is quite extraordinary. You know, much of the city's economy is almost being retooled sort of to cater to these guys. You know, there are sort of like Arabic signs in shops and things like that. And it's not so much a case of sort of being overrun. It's you know, I think all Belarusians know why they're here, right? They're there because the Belarusian government, Alexander Lukashenko, the president, wants to make a political point. He wants to punish Poland for its support of the Belarusian opposition by essentially shipping migrants to the border and then hopefully over the border. I think it is like an extraordinary case because what it basically represents is almost, you know, human trafficking on a state-level scale. You know, the Belarusian government has basically said, we are now going to, you know, make the migrant problem as difficult as we possibly can for Lithuania and particularly for Poland to try and inflict as much damage as we can on them. And you know, what my colleague Piotr Sauer captured sort of on that little trip to Belarus was really, you know, the resources of a fairly heftily sized European state being placed full square behind this sort of migration flow.
And the opposition from Poland is not insignificant, nor is the opposition from the EU. Are we looking at a conflict zone, a newly born conflict zone, and is natural gas part of the story, the pipeline?
Well, yeah, I mean, the natural gas element is huge because Lukashenko has said on several occasions, and I believe it, he actually restated himself today, that he could shut off the natural gas pipelines across Belarus. Now, the interesting thing there is that Russia will be very, very angry with him if he does, because Russia, you know, earns a good living on those, you know, on those natural gas pipelines. So, that's another element here. Certainly, I think, you know, Lukashenko has... You can wonder why he's done this, right? And I think the easiest answer to give is that he believes that sort of weaponizing migration is a way to get the EU to take him seriously again, to treat him as the president of a country. Because the EU declined to recognize his claimed re-election last year, which we generally believe that was flagrantly sort of rigged and that he didn't really win that election. But, you know, Lukashenko wants recognition, he wants acknowledgement, and I don't think he's going to get it because I think he's now such a toxic personality for Berlin, for Warsaw, and for Brussels, among other European capital cities, that I think, you know, this is probably a conflict that will remain in kind of stalemate. I don't think he'll get what he wants, and I don't think the EU will back down.
Felix Leit, CBS News, Moscow Times in Moscow. This is CBS Eye on the World. I'm John Batchelor.
You're listening to CBS Eye on the World with John Batchelor. Brand new luxury apartments. If you're in the market, listen. Brand new luxury apartments. Champion has a new property, River Park of Dublin, which is a mile south of Dublin. Location is everything. Spacious 1, 2, and 3 bedroom homes, designer finishes, resort style amenities, exceptional customer service. That's Champion. Champion's brand new luxury apartments, River Park of Dublin. Now do something about it. Visit livewithchampion.com. Livewithchampion.com.
Time for a sofa upgrade? Visit washablesofas.com and discover Anabay, where designer style meets budget-friendly prices, with sofas starting at $699. Anabay brings you the ultimate in furniture innovation with a modular design that allows you to rearrange your space effortlessly. Perfect for both small and large spaces, Anabay is the only machine-washable sofa inside and out. Say goodbye to stains and messes with liquid and stain-resistant fabrics that make cleaning easy. Liquid simply slides right off. Designed for custom comfort, our high-resilience foam lets you choose between a sink and feel or a supportive memory foam blend. Plus, our pet-friendly, stain-resistant fabrics ensure your sofa stays beautiful for years. Don't compromise quality for price. Visit washablesofas.com to upgrade your living space today with no-risk returns and a 30-day money-back guarantee. Get up to 60% off plus free shipping and free returns. Shop now at washablesofas.com. Offers are subject to change and certain restrictions may apply.
Stop the Sherwin-Williams Super Sale and get 40% off paints and stains August 8th through the 14th. With prices starting at $29.39, it's the perfect time to transform your space with color. Whether you're looking to revamp your interior or exterior, we have you covered with bold hues, soothing neutrals, and everything in between. Visit your neighborhood Sherwin-Williams store or shop the sale online. Delivery available on qualifying orders. Click the banner to learn more. Retail sales only. Some exclusions apply. See store for details.